Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. St. Patrick's Day was last weekend, and if you went out to celebrate, you may have noticed more non-alcoholic drink options on the menu. And that's not a coincidence. It's a growing movement. More people are cutting back on their alcohol consumption in favor of a zero-proof lifestyle. Restaurants and bars are adding non-alcoholic drinks and mocktails to their menus, with big brands like Heineken and Guinness now including non-alcoholic options in their lineups. In this edition of Enlighten Me, Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon discusses the growth of non-alcoholic drinks with spirits and hospitality writer Elva Ramirez, author of Zero Proof, 90 Non-Alcoholic Recipes for Mindful Drinking.
Elva, I'm sure you've heard some of this talk, but many are saying that this time we're living in right now in 2024, this is the golden age, or the so-called golden age, for NAs, non-alcoholic drinks, be it beer, wine, whiskey, tequila, what have you. We've obviously come a long way, but I'm curious why you think this is all happening right now for non-alcoholic drinks and this overall non-alcoholic movement, this lifestyle and the acceptance of it. Why is right now the moment for NAs?
There's multiple reasons for it, but the headline that I would give you is choice. So for the first time in a long time, I would say first time ever, really, someone who doesn't want to drink has so many more choices of like that are quality choices that are adult choices. By adult, I mean, they have sophisticated palates, like they have bitterness, they have mouthfeel, they have depth of flavor, they have a lot of complexity to them. It's not just juice. And so that's one reason why the consumer is interested in this. The consumer, this is very consumer driven. And as a result, we're getting a lot of really great products that have hit the market. There's been a little bit of a boom in non-alcoholic products that are set up for someone who likes cocktails. That's an interesting, that's a very important distinction.
There's some of that I want to drill down into, but just for a quick moment here, let's take a step back. You published the book Zero Proof, 90 Non-Alcoholic Recipes for Mindful Drinking. You published that in 2021. So, your time in this NA space, so to speak, how have you seen attitudes, in a social sense, change around non-alcoholic drink options and those who are choosing to live this NA lifestyle?
What's interesting is that while this feels very new, and it's certainly new in terms of the fact that we now have options in terms of products, and we now have an awareness in terms of hospitality, this is not a new idea at all, actually. So the non-alcoholic drink is gone through different names, but it is as old as the original cocktail. So in 1862, Jerry Thomas published the first cocktail recipe book as we know it. And that is the Bible for cocktail culture, in that, you have recipes for the mint julep, for example. So it's the foundation for everything that comes after in terms of cocktail. There are temperance drinks. They're called temperance drinks. There are temperance drinks in that book. So the non-alcoholic cocktail has been with us since the beginning. What's different now, as I mentioned, is the fact that we now have really great products that are not simple, that are complex, and that are interesting to drink, and that try to mimic some of the complexity or depth of flavor of a traditional cocktail, or a boozy cocktail, I should say.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting concept. It seems, the correlation seems fairly obvious. Better non-alcoholic options leads to more people buying them and growth and all that. So again, that correlation would seem fairly apparent, but are we seeing that across all different kinds here, whether it's, you mentioned mocktails, beer, wine? It seems like some have grown faster than others. How does it break down across the specific kinds of non-alcoholic options?
It's growing so fast, it's hard to say right now, but I think beer was really one of the early, non-alcoholic beer has been with us for a very long time. And I would say that it didn't have the best reputation for many years, but now, because of certain knowledge in terms of distilling, and it's now really kind of as comparable, it delivers as much as the same flavor as in terms of distilling as a traditional beer. And there's been a lot of investments in the non-alcoholic category by major players like Anheuser-Busch, Heineken, Carlsberg. They're seeing a lot of sales in this. I think wine, if you're asking like who's ahead of it, I would put cocktails next. Wine's still a little bit lagging. I think people haven't, there hasn't anyone who's really sort of solved the wine issue yet. It's coming along though. But I think cocktail culture, and with certainly the advent of Seedlip, which has really kind of just changed everything, which I think came out in 2016. Seedlip kind of basically introduced a brand new category, which is the idea of a non-alcoholic distillate or a non-alcoholic spirit. So something that's non-alcoholic, but you treat it and you treat it like a spirit, and you make cocktails with it in the same way. And that, when you talk about the changing attitudes, the introduction of Seedlip changed the way it opened the door and created a whole new category for how people are thinking about the non-alcoholic occasion in a bar. Because the non-alcoholic beer had been around, but it wasn't until we had these non-alcoholic spirits. And I say, and you know, the spirits is, we can argue about whether it's a spirit or not, but it's made in the same process as a spirit. They just sort of stop at the stage before alcohol is created. So there's, you know, it's made in stills and all that. When Seedlip came around and bartenders at the world's top bars started using these ingredients, these spirits, that changed everything. That was really where the difference is. And all of a sudden there's a lot more interest in it, and a lot, and as a result, we get a lot more startups and a lot more products that come in that make it so that you can go into a bar and order a beautiful drink, and it's still going to look as you know, elegant as the martini next to you.
Well, what about the cost of these drinks then? I'm fairly, we spoke off air before this. I'm fairly aware of the pricing today. You know, I've bought non-alcoholic beer and wine actually just recently for some occasions. But how has the price tag changed as NAs have got more popular, or is it fairly like similar to normal alcohol? What does that pricing look like now?
I'm going to say it's comparable, and there's a lot of resistance within the consumer to pay as much for a non-alcoholic. Let's say, for example, if a cocktail in New York City costs $18, if you put a non-alcoholic cocktail and also price it at $18, you'll find resistance within the consumer for that because there's a couple of different reasons for that. The consumers have been trained to think that the alcohol is the most expensive and valuable ingredient in a cocktail. That's not necessarily true, because at really top bars, what you're really paying for is everything that happens before you get to the bar. So you're paying for the bartenders and the back of house staff to make really great tinctures, to do really cool things with the fruits, right? To really transform the fruit into something else, whether it's a syrup, whether they're making a carbonated soda. There's a lot of work that's happening, and also fruit and vegetables are very expensive. So you're not actually just paying for alcohol, you're paying for all the labor that happens behind it. So in many ways, the non-alcoholic drink can cost in terms of labor, if not more, than the traditional drink, because now you're using even more fresh drinks, fresh ingredients. And so you're paying for the labor, you're not just paying for the ingredients itself. You are paying for the ingredients, but you're also paying for all the process that happens before you sit down at the bar.
You mentioned choice earlier, control and choice, essentially that ilk. But there are a variety of reasons people are turning to non-alcoholic drink options, whether they're going sober or they're already sober, perhaps there are nutritional reasons. Maybe you just want a lifestyle change. There's also the social aspect to it. But what are you hearing as far as why people, does that line up? Is it a variety of things? It depends on the person. What are you hearing? What are you seeing on that score in terms of the reasons people are turning to these NAs?
There's a couple different reasons for that, but the sort of top line reason I always give in terms of why this is trending now is that when you look at the food and beverage as a category, beverage is lagging behind food. So what we're the trends that we see in food will eventually come into beverage. And so I always link the popularity of the alternative diets, so keto and gluten-free and veganism, low carbs, all the things that people have been trained that they want as choices. Now they're seeing that because they want those choices, they want that. Because they want those choices in food, they want now the same choices in what they drink, right? So the popularity of oat milk, for example, the popularity of some of these alt meats, many of the consumers who have oat who drink oat milk also drink milk. And a lot of the consumers who, drink some or eat some of the impossible foods also eat meat. So it's that a consumer wants variety and a consumer wants choice.
You know, Elva, as we near the finish line, I want to know what you might recommend for someone who's interested in giving this a go and trying a non-alcoholic option or two. Where should that person start?
The good news is that there's been so many products that are out that you now have a choice that you, I, you know, when I started writing this book, there weren't a lot of products. I actually added a few at the very end because they had just debuted just as I was turning in my manuscript. Like that's how new some of these products are. So one, if you like cocktails, if you want something to replicate a whiskey sour, for example, you can start by saying, I want to make a version of a traditional drink. That's one way to start. I want to start with a non-alcoholic whiskey sour, for example. There's a company called Ritual. They're out of Chicago. They are absolutely fantastic. And they have a line of fake gin, fake whiskey, and fake tequila that you can then use as a substitute for traditional gin. They are fantastic. But then there's another way you can go where it's something that's has a complexity of flavor that's maybe not, it doesn't quite exist in the traditional alcoholic world, but it's a whole new flavor. And for them, I always recommend Everleaf. They're out of London. They came to the States about, I think last year, maybe, or a year and a half ago. They have different expressions that you can use in your cocktails. Absolutely. It's designed by someone who's a botanist. So it really has a real of just wonderful awareness of flavor and mouthfeel. And then last, if you want sodas, Casamara Club out of Brooklyn, they make sparkling Amaro sodas. They're absolutely fantastic. And then St. Agresti's, I think also out of Brooklyn, makes Phony Negronis, which I prefer to their bottled Phony Negronis, which I prefer to their traditional Negronis.
Thanks to spirits and hospitality writer Elva Ramirez and our Kyle McKinnon for enlightening us this week.